11. The Heart of the Agency. It had been relatively simple for Modo to take Directeur Bellanger's form. He had paid for a room in a nearby hotel and rested for several hours. He then removed his mask and stared at the photograph while composing the face. Colette had fetched the clothing from a haberdashery, while Octavia quizzed him about the upcoming mission. When he emerged, dressed in a dark suit and a long jacket, his belt cinched tight, he was amused by Colette's shocked expression.
"Sacré bleu," she said. "You have captured the image of Directeur Bellanger."
"It's a stunning gift, this shape-shifting." Modo had only meant this to be light-hearted, but he was suddenly aware that it sounded like bragging.
"Très excellent is what it is," Colette said.
"I prefer when he looks younger," Octavia said.
"Young or old, the disguise only lasts for a few hours, so let us hasten away," he said. Within minutes they were in another fiacre, and, shortly after that, had returned to the bureau. Despite the plain facade of the stone building, Modo felt as if he were looking at a fortress. The fence was taller than any of the nearby ones, and there were several guard stations. There were also plenty of gas lamps, making the courtyard relatively bright. He wiped the glass window of the fiacre, for their breath had fogged it. Smoke rose from three smokestacks protruding from the roof of the building. In the short time he'd been watching, he'd seen three tarp-covered wagons stop at the gates, present papers, and continue up to a large delivery door that led into the lower level of the building. Were the tarps hiding arms or stacks of files?
"Are you certain you want to do this?" Octavia asked. "I don't know that we can trust her."
"I do have ears," Colette said.
"I want you to hear,"
Octavia answered.
"This could very well be a trap."
"Why this whole complicated ruse, then?" Colette asked. "If it was a trap, I could have agents swoop down on us at this very moment."
"Modo is the strongest man I've ever met. To even stand a chance of capturing him, you would first need to draw him into your lair."
For a moment, Modo thought Octavia was having him on, but her face said otherwise. She really was bragging on his behalf. Well, it was the truth. Even Tharpa couldn't beat him at arm wrestling.
"I know you find this hard to believe, but I trust her, Tavia," Modo said, as he patted Octavia's hand. "She may have been a French agent, but her word is good as gold. That is one thing I learned on the Actinio. And I need this information. We need it. I believe Mr. Socrates would agree with me."
"There is no time like the present," Colette said.
A light flashed to life inside the carriage, and Modo was momentarily blinded by it. She'd shone what looked like a pocket lucifer directly at him.
"You have a battery-powered lamp?" Modo asked. "I didn't think the French were so advanced."
"Oh, la petite lumière. It is an old technology. The English are not the only ones with batteries."
She peered at his face.
"It continues to amaze me how much you look like Bellanger. Now, you remember the map I drew for you?"
"I've memorized it."
"Then you will recall that the office you want is in the center of the fifth floor, and that it belongs to Lucien Quin?"
"Yes, of course I do."
"You do not need to repeat the instructions," he snapped. Perhaps he was getting nervous.
"I have the plan in here," he said softly
as he tapped his skull.
"You have prepared me well."
He paused.
"Both of you." "Then we shall begin," Colette said.
She knocked three times on the ceiling of the fiacre, and the driver drove up to the front gates and stopped. Modo opened the door and stepped down to the street.
"Sois agressif," Colette whispered. "Remember to be gruff. Not your usual polite self."
"Indeed, I shall," he replied gruffly, then smiled.
"Take great care," Octavia said. "Don't go running around like a bull in a china shop." "The two of you are acting like mothers," he hissed,
then turned away before either could get another word in. Truth was, he was happy to be out of the wagon and away from the two of them. He strode to the front gate. Behind him, he heard the fiacre pull away.
"Arrêtez-vous,"
the guard commanded.
"Arrêtez-vous, monsieur,"
Modo said, correcting him.
"Mot de passe,"
the guard said.
"Ashenden,"
Modo barked.
for Colette had given him the password. The name had no meaning that he could discern, though he found it odd that they used a British surname. The man nodded and said in French, "Welcome back, sir." Modo, pleased his appearance had fooled a guard, didn't give him another glance. He carried on to the main entrance, passing a second guard station. Two hounds growled, and their master pulled back on the leashes. "Shut those hogs up," Modo spat in French, then opened the door to the deuxième bureau. He marched smartly down a brightly lit hallway. Of course the French would have electric lights. They liked showing off the latest advances. Modo found this new type of lighting to be garish, not nearly as warm and natural as gaslight. He tried to set aside his worries that the brightness would make it easier to spot any mistakes he'd made in his transformation. How many papers about England, about Queen Victoria, about Mr. Socrates, about Modo himself would be filed here in this building? If he had hours to spend, he could uncover a lifetime of secrets. But there was only one secret that Modo wanted to uncover tonight. He encountered another agent who saluted, but Modo just stomped by. A guard at the door to the stairwell also saluted, but Modo didn't even look at him, giving the air of a man in a hurry. He burst into his office and closed the door, then immediately exited through the office's back door and climbed the stairs to the fifth floor. Room 5498 was exactly where Colette's map had indicated. He opened the door and charged in, just as he imagined Bellanger would do. This was a mistake, as he banged his knee on a desk. He cursed and turned the key for the light. It flickered to life. These rooms were much smaller than Bellanger's, and bursting at the seams with perfectly piled papers, folders, and files. He went to the desk Colette had told him about, and discovered that the file drawer had been locked. Using two small pins he had in his vest pocket, he took over a minute to pick it. He chastised himself for not practicing enough recently. The lock eventually gave a click, and he pulled open the drawer. All the papers inside had been neatly placed in labelled folders. Ah, the bureaucrats were good at this sort of thing. He found a thick file marked Subject Modo, 24601, and began to read. At first there was very little of interest or import, only conjecture on his whereabouts. India. Someone had seen him in India. He laughed. He'd never been to Tharpa's homeland. Then he went back to the drawer and thumbed through several more files, stopping on one marked Ictinio Brunette Modo. He opened it and skimmed the French pages until his eyes found this. Agent Brunette insisted that an agent with the codename Modo was able to change his shape and his facial features. Her description led investigator Quint, 47B321, to doubt her sanity, but after several tests with doctors she was certified as sane. Quint searched records in England. He folded up the page and stuffed it into his pocket. Perhaps there was something else in the file, but it would take days to read through it all. He was here for one file only. As he replaced the file in the drawer, he noticed an envelope had been clipped to the back. Curious, he opened it. Inside were several pages, including a handwritten note in French. Copy of these pages 1 through 8 appear under Brunette Colette, 15901. It is important detail for file Modo 24601. Agent Brunette complains of nightmares and is easily excited. Her discovery of the Ictinio is exemplar, but the loss of the Vendetta leads us to conclude that ultimately she failed in her mission. She complains of dizziness and lack of sleep, and when interviewed by the physician she blames this on seeing the face of the English agent Modo, a face she describes as being gargoyle ugly. She has mental fatigue, compounded by physical exhaustion, and an extended stay in a sick room is recommended. When Brunette is released again, she should be put on light duty only. Mental fatigue. Blames this on the face of the English agent Modo. Gargoyle ugly. So, seeing his face had marked her. The deaths of hundreds of her comrades, the weeks spent as a prisoner on the Ictinio, the fight for their lives. These were all hardships, but none were listed as contributing to her illness. It was seeing his face, his true and ugly self. That's what had broken her. He skipped ahead where three sentences had been underlined.
Brunette has become extremely delusional and is no longer in full control of her faculties. She was sent to a La Roque sanatorium for 3 months, but it did not improve her condition. She was declared unfit for duty and released from employment on July the 7th. She'd spent time in a sanatorium. He'd seen the inside of Bedlam, London's most famous home for the deranged. The people there had been totally cracked. This threw everything into question. Had anything she'd said so far been the truth? Were his parents actually alive? Was he even French? Yes, that part had been true. Mr. Socrates had confirmed it. And the French agents were looking for his family, so there had to be something to it. Why was she helping him? Out of pity? Did she feel she owed him? He put the documents in his jacket pocket, along with several other papers that might contain something about his parents. He began to comb through the paperwork, madly hoping to find his parents' current address. The door swung open and a man walked in.
"Directeur Bellanger," the agent exclaimed in French. "I didn't expect to see you in the office this evening."
Modo closed the file drawer with a bang, keeping his voice gruff.
"Since when do I report to you?"
Colette had described Cannes as a thin, pale man, and this person fit that. The electric lighting made everyone look pale.
"Is there something I can help you with, sir?"
"No, Cannes, nothing."
Modo kept his sentences short. The more French he spoke, the greater the chance of a gaffe. The man would know Bellanger's voice well, but Modo had discovered that people often heard what they saw as though it was their brain's job to fill in the gaps.
"I understand, sir.
May I have a few seconds of your time?"
"I'm extremely busy."
"I just need to ask you about the Modo case. I've made great headway on the location of his family, and I have an important request."
"What's that?"
"I would like Colette Brunette to be arrested."
"Brunette? Why?"
"Because, sir, she has betrayed her former position. I have proof she has continued to research Modo even after her removal from the Bureau. She has recently been associating with foreign spies."
Modo stood up.
"How do you know this?"
"For the past few weeks I've had her followed."
"Under whose orders?"
"You gave me full right, sir. Remember? Do what is necessary were your exact words."
"Can, don't be impertinent."
"I apologize. But I must tell you that these spies she has been dealing with are British."
"British? Have you proof?"
"Yes, sir."
He paused, a glimmer of a smile crossing his face.
"You are the proof."
Modo stiffened. How could he have guessed?
"I don't follow."
The man reached into his coat and removed a pistol from his pocket in a swift, well-rehearsed motion.
"Because I am not Cain. My dear directeur may have hundreds under his command, but he would recognize me."
"I can't believe you are here. That you have come to us." "Put away that gun. What madness is this?"
"I've been doing much of the fieldwork on your case for 8 months now. I've interviewed Brunette. I've read the reports of your ingenious robbery of the French embassy in London. Do you think I'd miss the connections? But never did I imagine that you'd walk right into my office."
"Put down that gun at once. You are mistaken."
"Am I? Then tell me my name."
Colette hadn't mentioned any other agents.
"Put away the gun, you fool."
"Modo, enough of this," he said calmly, this time in English. "I am impressed. You do look very much like Bellanger, except shorter. I was handpicked and trained by him. He comes from southern France and has a meridional accent. Oh, and Cain retired 3 weeks ago. I inherited his office."
Modo sat down and shrugged in a friendly manner.
"You've caught me. Congratulations. What is your name?"
"Philippe Laroche.
It is a pleasure to meet you. I am, how do you English say, an admirer of your work."
"So, what do you intend to do with me?"
"Ah, you'll know soon enough. For now we have a room where I would like to take you for questioning. It's a quiet place on the lower floor of the building. I'd like to inquire about so many things. This clockwork guild, were they just a figment of Brunette's imagination? And the Association de la Permanence that controls you? And this Mr. Socrates? So much to review.
You'll be detained for some time, but your favourite meals will be served. We aren't barbarians. It will be a pleasant and polite series of conversations, I promise.
He waved his pistol.
Now, please stand up, or I'll shoot you.